Paper Money, the biweekly podcast covering the business side of the game industry. From what the hell letter are we on? L. From Labyrinth, the War on Terror, to Lunch Money, GMT Games, to Atlas Games. I'm Ben Clark.
And I'm Rhett Kipp.
Today is December 1st, 2010.
Yes, it is. We are into the big month.
Finally, yes. So, record Cyber Monday, by the way.
Yes, I can prove it by my lack of internet activity.
Oh, okay. Well, it was, suffice to say, it was the first billion-dollar day in internet history, according to the Interpundits.
Awesome. Yes. Awesome. You know, the best part is not one nickel is a contribution from me. So, damn the economy, full steam ahead.
And, well, this year I've been selling. So, you know, for me it was good. So I had a bunch of stuff on eBay I was trying to dump. So, anyways, our show, I wanted to do a new thing here at the beginning of the show. I wanted to do a show preview just to let everybody know kind of what they're in for. We're going to talk a little bit about Black Friday / Cyber Monday, which we're kind of already doing. Two, we're going to talk about the news. And this week, niche games are in the news. And we're not going to have a guest this week. I was going to try and get my good friend, Mr. Juan Mendez of Ludifact, on the show. He'd been over to the Chi Tag and the Toy and Game Inventor Expo. But scheduling conflicts prevented that. But we are going to talk hopefully in depth, about the idea of niche market games. So, and not just niche market, hobby market, but niche market, like sub niche kind of a thing.
Yeah, like where else in the real world can you go and find a market?
Exactly. So we'll be talking about that in a little bit. But first, the news.
Sorry.
No, that's quite all right.
My teletype sounds? I've just been waiting almost 2 years to do that.
It sounds gay.
It is. So we'll just be done with it and go on.
Sorry, I'm going to get harangued by the gay and lesbian community. No, that was there was a big controversy recently about a quote from a new film coming out. Where he accuses something of being gay. Anyways, that said, let's move to the news. You can make the sound now if you want.
It's too late. I'm shot.
All right. This is got this one from my email survey of the world. U.S. Chamber of Commerce gives board game to members of Congress. And the best way to describe this is that it's
would that be the incoming or the outgoing?
The incoming, of course. Okay. It's a roll and move
game. Let's not go with a course.
That's right. Well, it's no, of course it sucks. It's a roll and move game where most of the cards illustrate the bad things that actual laws do.
That makes perfect sense for the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, who's currently trying to buy the U.S. Congress.
We won't make any mention of the fact that they get a bunch of money from China and then give money to politicians, but they don't really take money from China and give it to directly to politicians. They don't do that.
That would be illegal.
Yes, exactly. Not a big fan of the U.S. Chamber of Commerce. However, it again, we'll talk more about niche stuff in the news. It was a crummy game. CNN Money had an article on it that I read. We'll talk about that in a minute. But our next niche game in the news. Registering the birth of children isn't a priority in many African countries, but the non-profit group Lawyers with Borders hopes to change that with the help of that old party standby, the board game.
No, that's Lawyers with Borders as opposed to without borders?
That is what the text said, Lawyers with Borders.
I just wanted to be clear on that.
I think it's worth pointing out that they're lawyers.
That was going to be my point.
The organization, which connects attorneys, has developed a game called Record It that seeks to teach women about the benefits of registering the birth of their children through a game in the vein of Monopoly and Life. Here's a hint, it's another roll and move game. The game rewards players with proper documentation with the ability to inherit a business or become a licensed taxi driver while denying opportunities to those without documentation. I couldn't make this stuff up. Trust me.
You know,
it just gets better from here, by the way.
I know. I've already read, and Let's just continue because
New Zealand children who have been affected by disasters will be among the first to benefit from an innovative board game being launched at Parliament Thursday, 25 November. The Getting Stronger game, developed by the grief and trauma support service Skylight, is carefully designed to help children and young people 8 to 14 years old talk about difficult situations in their lives, thoughts and feelings they have about them, and ideas for managing and keeping safe. It's designed to be played alongside professionals or support workers and is adaptable for a wide range of difficult life situations. So, for instance, if you're in New Zealand and the mine blows out.
And everybody you knew in town is currently, well, not living in town anymore or anywhere else for that matter.
Entombed. Anyways, for those who weren't paying attention, yes, there was a mine collapse in New Zealand. And here's, like I said, the hits just keep kind of coming. Students get on board to play the hiring game. This is from England. Youngsters took part in an apprentice-style task to discover which students in Bolton have the sharpest business minds.
It's Bolton.
Yes. Students from if we have any listeners at Bolton, I apologize. Students from five different schools gathered at the ESSA Academy in Greatlever to play a specially designed board game. They had to set up and run their own business. The game looks similar to Monopoly, but instead features Bolton businesses and organizations. That's organizations with an S in the center. Here's a guess. It's a roll and move game.
Yeah, you know, and the cool thing about Bolton is it's not lob spelled backwards.
Moving on. Do that with our next town. Amarillo board game helps local organization. Worth the Wait is selling their Amarillo on board game at local United stores from now through January. The game is a Monopoly-style game with Amarillo features and local attractions. The nonprofit is selling them to help with their abstinence education and says the game will help families come together and talk to their children, apparently about local Amarillo businesses. The game is selling for $34.99.
Well, you know, given that one of the local Amarillo businesses is ADB or ex-task force and thus people who make Starfleet battles, you know, this should keep them completely occupied. It's probably why it's got a price tag at $34.99 too.
Are you kidding? That's cheap for a local board game.
I know.
So anyways, yeah, the Amarillo Design Bureau, by the way, is in Amarillo. All right, moving on. This is my favorite niche board game in the news, and special thanks to Yehuda over at the Purple Pond for coming up with this one. Menstruation board games. I've been on the lookout for a board game about this topic for some years now. Turns out there are possibly two. One came out apparently prior to 1987, but the other is at Indexes Designed to Improve Life. One of their challenges for 2010 is an educational tool to improve the situation for girls reaching puberty in the developing world, where stigma, taboo, misinformation, and lack of privacy, sanitation, and facilities can cause problems, especially at school. The Indian-based Design for Learning has created a board game about menstrual hygiene to address these problems.
Now,
it's you don't have to have a comment.
It said in the developing world. Okay, you know, yeah. I'd missed that for some reason. My brain had decided that this was a, you know, the regular Western part of it. Oddly enough, I didn't think those problems were in most schools.
Well, you know, I'll be blunt. I don't know that the onset of puberty is any less traumatic in the developing world. You know.
Well, at least they have the hygiene covered.
Well, here they have it. Yeah. Well, here they have an Xbox game for it. or maybe an iPod app. Anyways, so those are all the niche games in the news this week. And again, we're going to come back to that in a couple of minutes. And then we've got some business news right here. Hasbro aims for 75% recycled packaging in 2011. And the dateline on this story is Pawtucket, Rhode Island, which for those of you who don't know is Hasbro's home base. So my guess is this is a straight Hasbro press release. Toy and board game maker Hasbro will increase the recycled content of its packaging and paper materials over the coming years and will hire a new director to develop and monitor sustainability initiatives. Hasbro, which creates Transformers and other titles, that are currently being turned into terrible movies at Universal, is aiming to have 75% of its paperboard packaging by weight be made of recycled material or come from sustainably managed sources in 2011. We expect that in reaching our 75% goal, the bulk of the paperboard material will be recycled. Well, yeah. Anyways, I'm going to skip the, oh, here we go. This is the important part. By 2015, Hasbro plans to bring the amount of recycled or sustainable content in paperboard packaging up to 90%. Now, for those of you who don't know, the content of your game board and your game box, that is all of that chipboard, all right, that makes up your box, not the label that's wrapped around it, but the gray chip inside it, is about 45% recycled material or more right now. Okay, without even trying, they're at 45 plus percent on the chipboard. What's usually not recycled, and this is because it's damn near impossible to get a perfectly uniformly white recycled sheet, is the label that wraps around the box or goes on top of the board, and the cards, the card paper is almost, those are almost never recycled. So my guess what they're going to do, okay, when they talk about from sustainable sources, they're going to start using FSC certified paper, okay? Forestry Service Council or Forestry Sustainability Council has a stamp that basically it has to come from a sustainably grown forest, basically right, that's replanted, and then it goes to a plant where it is processed. They don't do anything environmental down the line, but what they do, if you'll pardon the expression, is is tracked separately as an inventory item as FSC. You basically have to be ISO certified to do this, because you have to have all these processes in place to keep the FSC paper separate to guarantee that what goes into the final product is in fact sustainably harvested from a forest somewhere. So this is stuff that isn't terribly difficult to do for a corporation like Hasbro. And the benefits of doing it, one, there's a fairly substantial cost savings, by the way, in going to recycled materials for things like chipboard, which is why it's already at least 45% in most chipboard. And the FSC stuff, it costs a little bit more. But for a company on Hasbro scale, shouldn't be a problem. And honestly, just like when Walmart decided to go green, a lot of times there's an economic incentive on this as well.
Yeah. All those things aside, you know, the fact of the matter is, at least they're trying. You know, they didn't have to do it, and they've choosing to do this. I applaud this.
Yes. Do not think for a moment that I'm arguing against environmentally sound business practices. Frankly, if you don't balance your business against the environment in the long run, you don't have a business, right? Because, you know, once you can't breathe.
Is that an issue?
What's that?
Breathing. I've never really found it that useful.
I don't know. Let's cut down all the trees and find out.
Yeah, there we go.
But anyways, like I said, I think it's a sound business move. Like I said, a corporation this guy's a size of Hasbro, basically you can hire one guy who oversees, you know, it basically puts in new policies for paper purchasing. Ta-da, they're done. Okay, this is not hugely difficult for them to do. Quite frankly, the PR benefits are great.
Well, and hitting the 90%, though, is actually an impressive one. The 75, that's not too difficult
to do. Yeah, it said by 2011 on 75%, so I'm assuming bang zoom that that's going to happen.
Yeah, but the 90% is an impressive level to hit.
Well, you know, it's kind of interesting. I actually, we're going to go off on a tangent, folks. Hold on a second. A couple years ago, I was involved in the printing of a game based on the, or actually involved with, the Planet Earth TV show. Do you remember that?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, okay. And they wanted to do 100% recycled material for the game. All right, and if I recall, this was a Monopoly-style game, okay? So you had money, you had cards, you had a board, you had a box, and you also had plastic houses, and you had a plastic money tray. Here's the problem. The cost of printing everything on all recycled material was 40% higher, okay, than doing it on non 100% recycled material. That is a huge cost difference at manufacturing, right? I mean, that's just, you know, way over the top. The good news is that the game was produced with 100% recyclable, right? Is how it went to market. Okay, it went to market as 100% recyclable, which is great until you consider the fact that no one really recycles board games. But the killer was the plastics. There was almost no way to use recycled plastics in the game.
Yeah, plastics are a real bugaboo. I mean, there's a lot of stuff that we can do with it, but it's amazing what you can't do.
Correct. And like I said, part of it is the economics of scale.
Right.
Right. If there's one guy who's willing to pay a little extra for 100% recycled plastic houses, the extra cost of making those houses is astronomical. If everyone says we want 100% recycled plastic houses, then the cost comes down dramatically. So it's a very much an economics of scale issue on some of these components. But again, it went back to, like I said, the paper costs in particular were much higher. And again, that was the box label and the board wrap or the board label that really drove up the paper costs on that, because there was almost no way. But to use environmentally friendly, really, really white paper was difficult. So
yeah, this ought to be interesting since it's Hasbro. Now, the question to my mind is, is this Hasbro? Is this Hasbro's, you know, subsidiaries? You know, how far does this go? I mean, you know, the idea of Wizards getting up to 75% recyclable right now is pretty amazing, given the board, you know, number of book products that they produce. And, you know, they hit 90% even more so. So, like I said, I'm pretty excited by this. You know, next for the industry will be, you know, when Workshop and Fantasy Flight jump on board this idea.
That will be interesting.
There's a hint for you, GW and Fantasy Flight.
Games Workshop will never do it. If it costs them a nickel more. Sorry. All right. I'm dissing on GW again. Anyways, hey, let's move on. We got one more news story. And that is that the Washington Post pimped Catan over Monopoly. And I picked up the story via the Huffington Post.
You know, you just got to read it the way you wrote it, because it's more entertaining that way.
WAPO pimps Catan over Monopoly via HuffPo. what's what it says in the show notes. But it basically says Catan is the game for our times, the way Monopoly was the game for the Depression. And it was an interesting take on the story. But the Washington Post, pimping Catan is interesting because, right, we had the Wall Street Journal pimping it last year.
Yeah.
Now we've got the Washington Post pimping it this year. Catan really is the bellwether game, right? If you want to see how non-traditional games, right? By non-traditional, I mean not the stuff that you see in Walmart or Target are doing. Okay. The penetration and sales rate of Catan, I think, is a huge bellwether for the German games, for the Euros, and for almost the rest of the game market. And because it's such a, I don't know if it's a gateway game, but it's certainly the most prominent of the new crop of games.
I would say it's probably the new gateway game. I believe both Catan and Carcassonne are in at least a number of the big box stores locally. I don't know how they spread out.
Did Carcassonne get in? Okay.
Yeah, both of them.
I have a confession to make. I suck at Carcassonne.
It's a tile game, so I'm done. That was my explanation for my enjoyment of the game. It's tiles.
I enjoy it when I play it. I can't visualize the board the way it's supposed to go together. Mm. And I always, you know, come in like third or fourth, that which is, you know, out of two. But anyways, I digress. Anyways, that's the news for this week. Listener mail. We got a nice, very long letter from our regular writer, Dan. We're not going to do it in the show this week, because we wanted to keep the show a little short. And we love Dan to death, but we've been reading all of his letters on the air recently. So somebody else write in other than Dan, or Dan, maybe we'll use yours on the show next week. But Rhett, tell all these other wonderful people how they can send us some mail.
Well, you can contact us via email at papermoney@purplepawn.com. You can Skype us at Paper Money Podcast. You can phone us at 773-634-9377. Or
you can check out our RSS feed. That's at purplepawn.com/category/papermoney/feed. And that's just the Paper Money podcast feed. There's no other Purple Pawn stories on that. I know some folks have said, hey, we get, you know, we lose it because the Purple Pawn comes out with so much news. But this is the Paper Money only news feed. All right. Now, that said, let's move into some commentary. Now, Rhett, we were kind of joking about some of the stuff earlier in our news segment. I really wanted to talk, though, about niche markets, right? I mean, all of those stories came out in the last week and a half.
Yeah.
All right.
And they're fairly interesting. By the way, take note, Monopoly is still the big buzzword for the universe.
Yes, in case you haven't figured that out. But here's the thing. Now, those were fairly prominent examples of what we will, like, we normally, when Rhett and I talk about a niche market, we're talking about the hobby market versus mass market, all right? But when when we're talking about niche market, this is about dedicated niches outside the traditional game store market, okay? In this case, the most prominent, the four that come readily to mind: education, local business, health and psychology, and the business community. Okay, now we've seen basically the the stories we had earlier demonstrated all of that stuff, and I can run down the list here and name people or companies who specialize in all of these who are doing extremely well.
Yeah, it is. You know, it's one of those things we've talked about in brief, which has been, you know, you may be a great game designer, but you can't find a way to break through into, well, let's say, the full end or the, you know, the hobby end market, or you don't have an interest. You have a more limited interest on stuff like that. There are plenty of niche markets out there, and it's just, how do you cultivate them? How do you make the contacts?
Were you attacked? Are you okay?
That would be my cats fighting one another because, well, my cats currently want to be set on fire. You'll have to pardon me a minute as I have to go get creative with one of them.
Rather children than cats.
No problem. I just dubbed in all sorts of terrible, terrible sound effects, I think.
I'm good with that, actually. You could probably use the real ones for better effect.
No. Anyways, cat owners, good example of a niche market. But anyways, the... where I wanted to go with this is that.
Do they make good vellum?
Ow, edit that out, man. We're gonna get letters from them too. The people from Bolton and the cat owners. Anyways, the thing of it is that you have to look at these niche markets. One, as a designer, I think there's more of an opportunity here than as a business owner, as a publisher. Certainly, judging from the list of, you know, Monopoly clones that we just went through and in the designs that we were talking about that are all roll and move. There's also opportunities here, by the way, if you do graphic design and packaging and that kind of thing. But the education market, there are a zillion companies out there that do educational games, and that's all they do. Okay. Good example, not, they don't do just educational games, but they do a ton of them. Oh, the name escapes me. Shoot. All right, we'll have to come back to it. But suffice to say, there are a couple of companies that do everything from flash cards to regular games. And they make money, you know, every year in, year out, with a stable of, say, you know, 20 to 30 game titles and about a gazillion SKUs on flash cards. It's good money, and it's a big business. Local business, on the other hand, I think there's a better market here for a designer. I don't know that this is something that I would put up my money for as a money-making proposition. I don't want to be the money guy to do, you know, my townopoly.
Yeah, I certainly agree with you on that one. I really think that what we're looking at here, for the most part, in niche markets, I mean, certainly you can go out there and find things like the education field or a new level. Personally, I think that, there's probably a big calling, even though they don't recognize it themselves yet, in the different levels of medicine, healthcare. Let's phrase that, healthcare. I think both regular mental health, which it's always games have been very prominent in, but I think that there's a possibility to get it into, you know, entertainment fields for places like Mattel Hospitals, the Ronald McDonald Houses, those types of things as well.
Well, there's a company that nobody's ever heard of called Western Psychological Services, and I used to work for a company that printed their games. And Western Psychological Services would basically print a normal board game, okay, the cost of which, you know, if you were to buy it in a store, might, you know, you might look at this, and this is a $30 to $50 game. It would be, usually it was designed by someone in the psychological field, so there would be a PhD and all sorts of other letters after their name. And they would sell into clinical environments, and these games would sell for $130 to $150 in many cases. So they were able to sell really 1,000 games or less of a title and make and they had a wonderful margin, because it was, here's a game that's very specific about dealing with grief, about dealing with anger management, about dealing with a variety of titles, and were, you know, and had this market built for it. And it was, I won't say that, you know, that, like I said, I don't know that they were driving Rolls Royces at home, but I do know that they came back year in and year out and printed new titles.
Yeah.
Now, if you're not a healthcare PhD or you're not a clinical psychologist, maybe partner up with one to design the game you're going to pitch to, you know, but again, this is the kind of example of, these are people in the game business making money, who you've never heard of. Right. And but year in and year out, they're doing it. By the way, and speaking of Mytownopoly, we didn't mention the kings of Mytownopoly. Late for the Sky out of Cincinnati.
Yeah. Mm.
They are the Opoly cloned kings. By the way, if anyone ever talks about the 1990s lawsuit where it turns out Hasbro doesn't own the rights to Opoly, that was Late for the Sky. And Late for the Sky has a business model where they make Opoly type games that are not licensed, and they do extremely well with it. Their prices are, by the way, out of this world for U.S. production, because they only make they bought a box machine and set it to make the Monopoly style box, so that long rectangular box, and basically threw away the key. They don't ever want to adjust it ever again. They make one thing, and they do it really, really well. I would go up against them when I was printing and get pantsed every time. But Late for the Sky is, they're a printer, and they've got their own titles as well, but they will print, you know, for your town. Excellent, excellent example of somebody making money in a sub niche market. And then the last one is that I have on the list here is, the business community. I know a couple of designers who design games basically exclusively to be used in corporate training environments.
Yeah. I've had a number of those, and there's lots of different things that, you know, that market's looking for.
Exactly.
But, you know, and they're always looking for innovation, because effectively they have big budgets in a lot of cases. You're talking a Fortune 500 company, the kind of money that a board game puts out in order to teach middle managers how to manage better or whatever, it's such a small amount of money that they will do for an investment, you know. It's very, very profitable for them to go ahead. Or I should say not profitable. It's very economical for them to go ahead and invest into something like this.
Correct. It's something where, you know, as if you're trying to print a game for, you know, the general release, and the cost to make that game is $30 a game, you're like, you're going to freak out. You're like, there's no way we can sell this game to make money. We're going to have to sell it for $120. We can't print, you know, 250 copies of this game. We have to print 5,000 to make the price come down. You know what? If you are Exxon, you don't care. $30 a game is a bargain.
Yeah.
And so these guys will do it, and it's being used more and more as a training tool. And again, because these are niche markets, it's not like these positions just, you know, happen to, you know, or these opportunities, just, they're not just falling out of trees. You do have to go look for them, but they're out there, and there are people making money doing this.
You know, we talked about a lot of it. The one area that we also kind of glanced over is government. And there's a lot of stuff that's being designed and developed for the government at all sorts of levels. Basically, if you're a hardcore gamer with a military background, the military is constantly looking to upgrade its game training capability. Also, it's natural disaster relief and other things along those lines.
You know, I thought you were going to say, if you're a gamer, you know, if you're a hardcore gamer with a military background, I thought you were going to say, chances are, you've heard Bob McCarty's from Mayfair's story about the military wanting to buy the original version of Squad Leader.
Right.
The folks, here's a little story, and I'm robbing Bob's thunder on this because he really does a great job telling the story. And he might have told it when he was on the podcast our first year, many, many, many moons ago. But basically, a zillion years ago, he was in the military, and he was a staff sergeant at the time. But anyways, his higher ups, this lieutenant colonel, loved this game. They wanted to buy like 30,000 copies of Squad Leader and put it in every squad bay in the Marine Corps. So they go to Avalon Hill, and Avalon Hill says, no, you don't want that game. You want Advanced Squad Leader. It's coming out soon. It's much better. And the lieutenant colonel says, no, I want this game. This is the game I want. I want 30,000 copies of this. Avalon Hill said no.
Well, and, you know,
that's not good niche marketing.
It's not good niche marketing logic. No, and, you know, dealing with the government is a whole unique thing. I mean, I've dealt with them a few times, and, you know, their demands are a lot higher. There's a reason why everybody charges the government 3 to 5 times the going rate.
All I know is that even at the time, right, which was probably going to be, what, the early 80s?
Yeah.
30,000, that was big numbers.
It's, even yeah, then, it right, was when never they,
when they, yeah, when even when they were printing these things in a lot larger numbers than they are now, that was still really big numbers. But anyways, again, another niche market, again, government. So, folks, like I said, there are many, many, many more ways to skin a cat in this business than you can possibly imagine. So, all right, that's our commentary for this week. Rhett, what's coming up?
Well, there's this little minor event coming up called Christmas.
Woohoo!
And shortly following that will be New Year's. But, you know, Christmas being the big one. So, you know, we've talked, we didn't really even talk about, Black Monday.
We'll come back to that in a second. I just want to say that, in the hobby market, the post Christmas bounce where gamers take the money they used, they got at Christmas and go buy the games that they didn't get for Christmas is actually, pretty huge.
Yeah. It's, in a lot of cases, the retail places that I work at, the week after Christmas is usually the second strongest week, with only the week before Christmas exceeding it.
Yeah.
It's amazing. People come back. It's usually the 2 weeks afterwards. And it's a nice time to get your stock reduced if you're looking at, you know, you've got a lot of extra inventory there and you're coming up to end of the year in January or December 31 or, you know, early February, whatever your year end is. It's a nice time of year to put a lot of stuff on sale, clear it out, because people do have money and people like bargains.
That's right. And shortly after the new year, they go back to college.
Yes.
That's really, or school. And then they don't come into the game stores often. So
yeah, March, I believe, is the next time.
That's the next bounce. That's right. So anyways, what were you going to say about Black Friday and Cyber Monday?
Well, I was going to say, you know, a number of things we've heard about, both of them are very positive this year. I can say from my local area gamers, and not just my local area store, everybody reported they were extremely busy, which frankly surprised me, having dealt with a 3-hour rush, something I'm just not used to seeing at all at the store I work at, on Friday. And it was people who had been out shopping and were just continuing to shop. It wasn't necessarily our regular consumers.
Very cool.
Yes, it was very cool. And you have info about Cyber Monday, which my only comment about Cyber Monday is I could not get on the internet.
Well, thankfully we weren't taping that day. Cyber Monday was, like I said, it was the internet's, I don't know how they do this, how they calculate it. Supposedly it was the first $1 billion day in history. It was something like 40% more than last year in terms of growth. So absolutely huge day for internet retail. And games in general, I couldn't tell you. I could. I have anecdotal evidence because I was selling some of my collection on eBay. It seemed to do well. On the other hand, the stuff that did well were the things you would expect to do well, right? So I had like I had a Ticket to Ride out there and a Dominion. But for instance, Constantinopolis, which was a big hit at Gen Con, didn't sell. Okay. Mm. So, you know, I think as we get into Christmas, even the gamer titles skew heavily towards the big titles.
Yeah. So. I mean, people are still looking, you know, if you're looking to break in a new crowd of gamers, you're not going to give them, you know, your hardcore game. You're going to give them your entry point game.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, Ticket to Ride is one that I can play with my grandma around the Christmas tree. I can't do that with a critical hit ASL expansion.
Yeah, I don't know. In your family, I'm actually surprised by that.
No, Grandma, let me explain the dash rule again, and then we'll move on to residual firepower. Anyways, other stuff you need to be thinking about this week. Prototypes, get them done. New York Toy Fair is coming up. Gamma Trade Show is coming up. Just because you only want three doesn't mean it takes any less time for the person making them than to make 1,000. In some ways, it's actually more difficult to make three than to make 1,000. But again, start thinking about getting your prototypes done if you're going to go to New York Toy Fair or the Gamma Trade Show and show those off. And for the rest of you, I don't have any advice.
I'm kind of trapped here.
I mean, don't take any wooden nickels.
You know, leave the cookies out for Santa if you don't celebrate that part of the holiday.
Then leave them out for me.
Yeah, I was going to say, leave them out for Ben. He's currently going door to door. He's traveling around the world, I understand, this year, though I don't believe it's on Christmas Eve.
Yes, and I like oatmeal with chocolate chip. So, anyways, that said, Rhett, take us out of here.
Well, our next show will be December 17th. And
should we make that our year-end show? I think we have one more show after that that'll be our year-end wrap-up and our predictions for 2011.
Yeah, actually, that would be the 30th or 31st, I believe. Actually, in theory, we would be doing one New Year's Eve.
Yeah, just so you know, folks, we might have that one in the can. That, yeah.
Little early on that one, folks.
You know, Rhett and I are pretty gamer geeky, but, you know, New Year's Eve, we might have plans.
Might. And, you know, it just happens to fall between Christmas, too. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know, last year we had the show that came out New Year's Eve, or Christmas Eve, and we had my good friend, comedian Kostaki Economopoulos, on the show. And just because it was a lighthearted show, and quite frankly, we figured no one else was listening. And, anyways, but maybe for December 17th, we'll do something fun for that show as well. Again, folks, we'll talk to you in a couple of weeks, and hopefully Santa is going to leave something good under your stocking. If not, you should get on the internet and buy something for yourself.
Because everybody else just has.
That's right.
Well, that's all for me. I'm Rhett Kipp.
And I'm Ben Clark. Ho, ho, ho.